is up, everyone, and welcome to the Mint City Soccer Show. I'm one of your hosts, David Gustler. I'm here with my good buddy, Matt Swift. Matt, how are you doing on this lunar eclipse Monday?
I'm doing okay. How about yourself, David?
Good, man. Good. Are you partially blind in one eye yet? Have you looked up into the sky and recovered from looking up at the eclipse today?
Yeah, I couldn't help it. I looked up a couple times. So
awesome. Man. Well, that sounds like a much
sunspots.
Sunspot. It sounds like a much better experience than I had sitting in a dentist's office during the eclipse. So I got to see it get gradually darker outside sitting in the dentist chair, and then it got progressively brighter while I was sitting there. So but we're not here just to talk about eclipse as much as, you know, I guess Charlotte FC wants us to with the Sermenti tweet earlier today. But we're here to talk about the Charlotte FC recent loss to the New England Revolution, which stung a little bit, right, Swift? So how are you feeling after sleeping off that game about 48 hours later since they played?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still super disappointed. It's a game that we 100% should have won. We had our chances, and again, you know, we've talked about this leading up to this game. Like, we keep missing chances, and eventually, it's going to really bite us in the butt. And this is the game that did it. New England is a poor team. They didn't offer much against us, but again, those missed chances cost us 3 points and crucial 3 points on the road.
Yeah, it was a fun day though. At least we did our live show in Salud. We got to see a lot of fans of the show and hang out with a bunch of different soccer fans and have some amazing pizza, beer, etc. So at least that kind of canceled out the loss, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was a fun experience. The pizza was amazing. So definitely want to go back and have that again. And just being back at our old stomping ground and getting to see folks is always nice. And I really appreciate everybody that took the time to come out, and also the folks that hopped on the show to give their takes. So yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, I know that was our first time, and big kudos to the man behind the curtain right now, Corey Ensko, for getting all the technology set up for that show and having it live. I know it took a lot of work, but he's right now pulling all the strings. But let's dive into the game a little bit, Swift. So what'd you think about the lineup that Dean Smith made for Charlotte FC? So some few little changes here and there. You had Leo Labada start for Charlotte FC. You had Curran Vargas switch sides a little bit and get back into his more natural position there on the left wing. But what'd you think about that lineup going up against New England, going up into Foxborough?
I liked it. I thought it was very aggressive. And I was in line with it because I thought we should come out quick and fast and get up early. I think that was the plan with the lineup that we had out there. We just didn't execute in the final moments. So that was the difference. But I really liked the starting 11. I can't say really much about that. So it was, yeah, as Blake just said in the comments, it was a tough loss.
It was. So diving into that starting 11 and really kind of, I don't want to say assessing players and how they performed really, right? But I know there was a lot of talk about Patrick Ajimane, really about his performance in this game. You know, if you're looking at FootMob, which I'm looking at right now, he was actually probably the lowest rated player out of the starting 11 for Charlotte. And there's been a lot of talk about him starting over Enzo Capetti as he's recovered back from an injury. So what did you think from Pat's performance? And I know we can talk about Jalen Lindsay's comments and Dean Smith's comments during the press conference, but what did you think about Pat's performance in this game?
Again, he's a lot like Vargas. He keeps putting himself in good positions. The chances that he missed, the two big ones, he's the reason why we were even in that situation to start with. I've seen some comments about, like, you know, should we send him down to Crown Legacy and all and work this all out? I think that's preposterous. I'm sorry. I just think that he keeps, not only him, the whole entire team keeps missing chances. And that's the big difference. But he's the reason why we had the chance in the first place, the first one that he missed, and the second one. It was great by him to pressure the ball and win that. Just didn't execute in the final moments, which has been a common theme for the whole entire team this season. So it's something that I think the team needs to work on instead of maybe doing rondos and everything else, small sided games. Just how about we just practice finishing for like 10 hours straight? So I think that's what we need.
I was going to ask, like, I mean, like, how do you practice finishing? I know that sounds like a silly question, but it's like, I mean, a lot of the training now you see is small side games, more like on technical ability, finish, or, you know, finesse, passes, touching the ball, etc. I mean, these guys are professionals. Do you just go out there and say, okay, start taking shots, or what do you do?
I think you have finishing drills, and somebody out there has to say, hey, guys, basic soccer 101, don't lean back when you're shooting the ball. How many times have we blasted a shot over the goal? It keeps happening. You've got to put these on frame. Abada had one that he put on frame, and I was perfectly okay with that. The keeper made a decent save on it, but at least he got it on frame. But other than that, we keep just blasting the ball over the goal, and I cannot figure that out. Like, even if it's a dribbler, just get it on frame. It's so frustrating to see so many shots just skyrocketed. It makes no sense.
Yeah, and just a little comment here that Greg put in the chat just now. It's like, they always do finishing drills during warm-ups pre-match. That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few that get sailed into the supporter section every once in a while that hits a fan and those kind of things like that, but it's not as frequent as what we've seen recently. And I just don't understand what it is, or if it's just like a mental part of it, or if it's just like rushing it. Like, what do you think it is?
It's a lack of composure by professionals, like you're saying. Yes, Patrick doesn't get paid as much as some other players, but you still have to go out and finish. That's what you're paid to do. And then we have a DP as well, too, that's doing the same thing. And then we have a winger. We have a number 10. Literally everybody on the team is just blasting the ball over the goal. Like, get it on frame, hit it low. And that would be my mantra during training. Get your head over the ball. Get it on frame. At least get it on frame. If anything, get it on frame. So it's just very frustrating.
Yeah, and not to belabor that point, but I know there's an interview with Jalen Lindsey after the game. Dean Smith even said, like, hey, they've got to get more technical, focus on finishing these chances that we're creating. And Jalen even said in the game and post game that, you know, Pat's taking this loss personally, apologized to the team, basically saying that, you know, that we're reason we were in this situation because I didn't do my part, you know, and, you know, basically saying that we as a team, we shouldn't be blaming just Pat in this situation. But it's good to hear that. But it's also I don't know. I don't want Pat to get into a space where he's letting it bog him down as a professional, that it's weighing on him so much, you know?
Yeah, no, I like the fact that he's taking ownership of it. But again, it takes a team to win and lose. And again, he's not the only one that missed chances. Abada, even though he got thrown on frame, maybe he could have done better with that, right? Capetti had a chance in the second half. And before I forget, that play where Capetti missed that header, he may have been a little offside, but you know who wasn't? Milanda, who was wide open on the back post. And if Enzo would have let this go, Milanda would have had a good chance. Maybe he skyrockets the ball over the goal, but he had a really good chance. He was completely wide open. He would have been onside. So, but again, like, Patrick's not the only one that's missed chances. So, and again, we could be critical, and we should, but he's the reason why we had both of those huge chances. So
I'm going to pull up Joe's comment here in just a minute, but I wanted to transition to one more person on the team that was a new starter for us. Made his season debut for Charlotte FC is Jalen Lindsey. So what did you think about Jalen's performance coming in, filling in for Nathan Byrne, who was out with a knock? Nathan's played lights out for us for almost a consistent amount of time. Been great on one-on-one defending, has played balls across, has made runs, you know, within the corner. What did you think about Jalen's playing ability this past game?
I'm a big fan of Jalen, and what a good thing to have, where our right back, who's been amazing, you know, unexpectedly goes down, and then you have someone else that can step in that rating wise was probably the best, if not the best on the field. So that's great. And we need more of that. And it's nice to have depth. And I thought Jalen played great. We you know, I'm a big fan. I know Jalen certainly has a lot of fans in the community. So it was good to see him out there and get good minutes and solid minutes and perform well.
Yeah, I thought he played pretty well, to be honest with you. There wasn't anything glaring that potentially was bad. I felt like maybe he got a little gas there at the end, but nothing too crazy. But you know, and we'll get to the second half a little bit because there was some back and forth ticky tacky kind of like passes just because of the way that New England's playing, because they knew that they were up. But you know, we'll touch on that here a little bit later. But so now we've talked about Pat, we've talked about Jalen. What'd you think about Abada's premiere as a starter for Charlotte FC, playing second match for the club, technically first start for us, and made his debut as a starter in New England in like what, 35 degree weather, pouring down rain. I know Greg Franco's in the comments here and was up there supporting the club in that nasty weather. So what'd you think about Leal's performance as a starter for us?
Not bad. I feel like he didn't have a lot of opportunity, right? This was a dreadful affair, weather-wise, game-wise. I think it's one of the worst games we've had this season. There may be a time where, and maybe soon, that I might want to see Lil, I want to see what he could do in the middle, maybe. And then we play Vargas and Tavares on the wings. Because I got to say, Breck de Hare is working my nerves a little bit. So I need to see more of him, or we make a switch and try something. But I thought Abada played decent. He just needs more games. But I'm excited. And again, had a really good chance this game.
Yeah, I thought he played okay. He had a chance early on. I don't think it was anything that was like lightning fast or anything like that. But he played pretty well at different times. But let's talk about Breck, because I know we were talking during the game and while we're at Salute together about Breck and what options we have to kind of sub Breck in. So I know we had Vaughn on earlier in the season. I know he was basically saying like, hey, he's on pace to have a decent year. Like, he had a goal and assist early on. It was being asked to play at a position a little bit, playing wing for us because of how thin we were. And we also had some not consistent starters at the wing. We had Vargas and Tavares and players that weren't, you know, kind of in sync at that point of the season. What's your impression of Breck so far and his performance at that cam role? Because it's been, what, 7 games so far this season, and has had almost a half a season last year to kind of get into form. What do you think about him so far?
I'm not pleased. I'll just say it. Because you said he was here last year. So far this season, whatever he's produced, that's fine. But overall, he is not creating chances for us, really. Enough for me. He's not getting in good pockets of space. He's not creating. He's not taking the ball, dribbling, and driving. That's where someone like Abada, that's kind of what I want to see. Yeah, I think, you know, Joe just dropped a comment. The 23rd of April is coming fast. So that's the window closing. So we may make a move. I don't know if that will be a DP move, but we could start, you know, maybe we'll see another move there and then in the summer. But, you know, it would be nice to have someone that wears the number 10 that could do number 10 things. We got beat by a number 10 off of one play. Again, you know, Carlos Hill did jack squat all game long, but when the time came, the ball fell to him magically. It sucks. It's very unlucky. Ball falls to him, and he makes the shot. If that was us, we probably blasted over the goal, but that's what your money gets you, someone like that. That's what we need. That's what we're really missing, and if we get that, holy crap, I think we're going to be dynamite. We just don't have that yet, and that's something that we need.
You know, it's so funny because I think I remember thinking it. I didn't really say it out loud, but we just need to make sure that Hill doesn't get pissed off whenever he plays us. So leading up to that, I'm going to come back to this, how the stoppage of play happened. But he got pissed because of the stoppage of play, and he got carded.
Oh, yeah.
And then immediately after that, the build up of play happened where he was able to kind of take the ball down and pass it to his brother or whatever, Nacho or whatever, and then was decent save by Kalina, and then Hill was able to
it was a good save, but
a really like finesse it perfectly into the goal between like two defenders. But just don't piss him off, because I think that's usually when he gets scored, he scores on us. I think last time he played us, there was a PK involved and he scored off of that and shushed the crowd, all sorts of stuff. But
yeah, he's
it'd be nice to have a player like that.
No, yeah, absolutely. It's a player that you absolutely cannot, I can't stand him. However, he's someone that I will put on my fantasy team because he's lucky, he's skillful, and he's the type of player that can make things happen for you. And unfortunately, we don't have quite that player yet. I think Swiderski was a little bit of that. He could make a play out of nothing and you know, hit a free kick and things like that. But the good news is that we can go out and get someone like that. The good news is that we are sixth in the whole entire league in expected goals. You know, we're at, you know, our expected goals is 12.32. So that's good. So
crazy.
We're creating.
Yeah.
In the whole league, we're sixth. In the Western and Eastern Conference combined, we're sixth. That's all great news. We've only scored six goals from expected, you know, a little over 12. So we keep saying the past like two or three episodes, it's coming, right? Even Vaughn was on here, is like, it's coming. It's at some point it has to. So I think we'll be okay. Our defense has been playing lights out, even though, you know, we got scored on this game. I think we're one of the best in the league. So the problem is just finishing. Even without a proper number 10, we're still creating chances. So it's going to be dynamite when we actually get someone who can.
So I'm going to come back to the Hill stoppage, because this comment came up, and this is again going to that Brett conversation. Sorry to keep going, jumping back and forth a little bit, but this one is from Good Golly. So Good Golly says, the main thing that stood out to me was the chemistry. I don't think it works out completely position wise, but I think if you start Pat, he needs Yurdi. So if you start Enzo, he needs Vargas. So one thing I noticed, and there was times with Breck in particular where it seems like we were trying to make passes to make runs and players would just stop making runs, or they misread what they were trying to do and didn't overlap like they wanted to, or weren't going in the right direction. It just seemed like that chemistry from that cam roll and trying to create, like we had potential there, especially in the first half. Just seemed like it just wasn't clicking how it should have been, especially for a team that had some of these players that's been playing together at least for a year plus now.
Yeah, this game reeked of last year. It was very much stagnant, not moving off the ball. And that's what we've been good at. We've also been good at like pressing when we're on defense. And I didn't see that quite enough. I mean, Patrick almost scores off him blitzing the goalkeeper. I didn't see enough of that. I didn't see enough energy at the beginning. Like, again, to me, it's a no-brainer. You have a team that's struggling. They haven't been creating chances. You just get, you know, put them under pressure early. I didn't think we did enough of that. And again, yeah, I think this is Becca, by the way, who's Good Golly. She makes a good point. The chemistry didn't seem there. The whole thing seemed off Saturday.
So there's lots of comments here. So I know we got a big fan Q&A at the end, but then we're going to get some more of these comments here coming in. So keep them coming, y'all. So Ryan Murray brought up here, and this is something I know that a lot of people are like wanting to experiment with or even had comments about. But they ask, what about a 4-4-2 where we get Enzo and Patrick on the field together? Why haven't we tried that? And why wouldn't we? If that's two different type of strikers for us to do that, why don't you think we've seen that, Swift?
You do lose kind of a more of a defensive posture there too, because you're going to have two players up top, basically staying up top, and so that puts a lot of stress on the two midfielders, which would be Westwood and Gianni. But you lose like Brecht, Dehaere, right? Kind of going back and forth. I mean, it's not a horrible idea. I think the team is really married to this 4-3-3. Which can work and has worked. Here's the thing. Again, expected goals were there. Defensively, I think we're second in the Eastern Conference in goals allowed. So it's there. It's just we cannot finish for some reason. Once we start doing that, and to me, that's kind of an easy thing to fix. Once we're there, we're going to be really, really dangerous to deal with.
Just make sure we don't have Fuchs teaching and coaching the strikers again this year, right? Just playing. So,
I don't know who the striker coach is or attacking coach is, but something's got to give. Something's got to happen. Somebody needs to start yelling at some folks about getting the damn ball down.
It's interesting.
It's getting because I was going to say it's getting absurd at this point. I'm getting kind of angry about it because it's soccer 101. It's like one of the first things they teach you is like when you're shooting is to keep the ball down. And yeah, it's going to happen, you know, whatever else. But like that's basic soccer 101.
So there's two things just to kind of build off that. One, I'm interested to know what Dean's going to do. Because remember when Dean first joined, he said that the conference room or like the HQ that they're going to have a lot of like learning sessions. He wants that to be known as a classroom. He wants to be able to teach and mold and build the players up, right? So it's interesting to know like after a game like this where we had two, I would say, successful games. Like we beat the reigning MLS champion. We drew, which we probably should have won, against the reigning Supporters Shield winners, right? And then we follow it up with a kind of a shit performance against the East Coast or East Division's worst place team, right? So it'd be interesting to know what Dean does in that classroom setting for the guys and kind of build off of that heading into this week. You know, and really build off of that for that. Now, from a Breck situation, and I keep going back to that, but are you going to stick with Breck in this lineup? I know you said that you want to try to maybe see Abada come in, but who's that sub for Breck coming in? And then who would you kind of ideally put in that position there, Swift?
I mean, I don't know. I would try it at least in training, moving him inside just to see what he could do. Because again, like, what are you losing? Nothing. And actually, you're getting Abada on the field and Tavares and Vargas. They're all on the field at the same time. And then Breck can be a sub or our field. I don't know, but if I'm the coach, I gotta have a conversation with Brecht and let him know like we need more out of the number 10. If you were gonna wear that number, you have to perform like you're wearing that number, and he's not. So I just want to see more. He has it in him. And I think Becca is talking about Pekovic for Pekovic. Yeah, he's another one that I would throw out there, and he played well. So yeah, there's some options, but I would have a conversation with Brecht.
So, and this is, and Corey actually just started Greg's question, but so I'll build off of that first before I pull that up. But I know in Slack, we had the conversation about defense, like beginning of the season. I remember thinking preseason, I was kind of worried about the defense. I was like, man, they weren't very good last year. We'd let in a lot of goals, couldn't close games out. Our form, shape, whatever. And it comes to find out we've actually been pretty damn good at defense for the most part, right? Players have been playing pretty well. They've been in form, been consistent, et cetera. But do you think Dean kind of, I don't want to say expected us to struggle scoring, and that's why he's put such an emphasis on defense? Like, remember early in the season, he's like, hey, every clean sheet, I'll buy you a bottle of wine, whatever it is, right? Do you think he kind of expected us to struggle a little bit with scoring and attacking and has put such an emphasis on defense? So that way, if we did score, we were able to hold a lead? Or is it just coincidence from that perspective?
I think there could be some to that, but remember, we pretty much led the league last season for most of the season and goals allowed, the whole entire league. So I think it was really looking at that. And also too, just, you know, we've talked about this 100 times now, like, why are you making Andrew Privet do something extra and difficult? Why are you pinching in so much? Why are you doing all these things? So I think it was, you know, one, keeping it simple, and then two, just fixing the defense so we're just not leaking goals nonstop. And that gives you a chance to draw games, and that gives you a chance to win games. So again, the only thing we have to do, we don't have to tinker with the lineup. We're going to get another DP, and that's going to really change things. Again, all we got to do is, you know, score these chances that we get. We're creating the chances. That's the only problem that I see. And when I'm looking at the stats in black and white, that's the problem. It's not defense. It's not the midfield. It's not Enzo Capetti. It's not Patrick. It is literally putting the ball in the net because we keep creating chances. So once we can start doing that a little more efficiently, we're going to be golden. So, and again, if I'm the coach and I'm talking to my players, you know, a little bit, again, perspective. We had back-to-back-to-back road games. We come home. We play defending MLS champs, defending Sports Shield winners. We are the reason that Columbus and Cincinnati are not 1-2 in the Eastern Conference right now. That's us. We've done that. So then you go on the road.
We also broke Columbus's DP mentally since summer.
Oh, yeah. he's not having a good time right now. Things have come off the rail there. But seriously, like, we are the reason why Columbus has lost once so far this season. We did that. So there's lots to be excited about. Yes, we can be critical. This game sucked. We played horrible, but it's just one game. And I just saw so many people kind of revert back to, oh my God, we lost. Patrick sucks. Enzo sucks. The coach sucks. The front office. I'm like, it's one game. And again, could have won this one. Eventually, this is going to swing back around. And plus, we're going to get more reinforcement. So I'm not too worried. I am getting very frustrated with blasting the ball over the goal. But there's lots to be positive about, though.
Yeah, but not to derail too much. I remember reading on Facebook and just those different things, people overreacting. And it's 7 games into, what, 34, 35 games of the year. Like, we're a fifth of the way into the season. You're going to have bad games. It's going to happen.
Sure.
You know, like, I'm a fan of Fulham and Lazio, unfortunately. And there's games where you look really great. We're going to be top of the table. And then we shit the bed and just be terrible, right? So unless you're, you know, Man City or something like that, or whoever, you're not going to win every single game and play every single game. So
what? But some of the comments I've seen are from folks that follow and support Real Madrid, Man City, even, you know, like Liverpool, where they lose maybe twice a whole entire season. And they've also been around for 100 years, right? So this is year 3. We're not playing horrible. I've seen comments where, and again, I'm not sure why I get on Facebook sometimes, especially after a loss. I should know better. But like, people are like, we should really let the players know how we feel. We should turn our backs on them when they come out and everything. I'm like, dude, we're 6 points off from first. We're 7 games in. Again, if you look at the stats, 6th in the league in expected goals. Like, we're not horrible. It's not quite time to do that yet. So maybe if this keeps happening and this is a trend, it's okay, maybe. But now there's like this crazy thing where, like, anytime you lose, we got to like protest and like let the players know how horrible they are. Like, trust me, like Patrick, he more than anybody feels horrible, right? We can sit here and be critical and say how bad it was. Trust me, you know, he thinks he lost that game for us. So yeah, they feel just as bad. So I don't think we're quite, you know, at the protest level quite yet.
People just love a good protest, Swift. That's what it is. So
I guess so.
No. Yeah, I should take a lesson from you. I shouldn't go on there either after games, especially that we lose. So we got a lot of questions here coming in, and we got a pretty good fan Q&A list here. So Corey, I don't know if you want to come on and read some of these questions for us, but folks, keep these questions coming. And so that way we can kind of answer your questions here live, but we've also got some that were offline. But Corey, welcome back to the show. Sorry that you couldn't, you know, kick me out for a fourth week in a row.
No, it's okay. I'm glad I still got to come on for a little bit. I'm glad I managed to make my camera work in the time that y'all were talking about the match. That's literally all I was doing the whole time, was playing with camera settings. That's a fun thing to do. Technology's great. We have a ton of stuff. First of all, I did want to say, because I thought the same thing from Richard Clark, We're not the Panthers, you know, like it's you don't have to look far in Charlotte to see other sports organizations that are worthy of being upset about how they're performing. So we're not there. We're not the Panthers. We're not the Hornets. We're doing all right, even though the last match was really frustrating. So I wanted to shout that out. Let's go ahead and work through some of these live questions real quick. A couple of comments, really. I'll start with first, not even so much questions, but just from earlier in the talking about Patrick. Joe Amerson says he has 13 shots, 8 on target, 1 goal, 1 assist. Enzo has 6 shots, 4 on target, 0 goals, 0 assists. Patrick is still taking more chances with only 1 game difference between them. And then
can I pause on that just for a second, Corey? Because I do know, like, a lot of people give Enzo crap and a lot of people give Pat crap after this last game, et cetera. That, to me, just looking at that on paper, and I know different players, different things, the one thing that I wish Enzo would do more of is just pull the trigger on shots sometime. Like, that is the only thing I wish that he would do more of. And it feels like, I don't want to say he's gun shy, but I just feel like he just is hesitant at times. I don't get it. I don't understand it.
This is normally something I would say as a positive thing, but I think he's too far on that side. He's almost too unselfish of a player when it gets to those final moments. Like he sometimes, especially as a striker, I feel like sometimes he's looking for the pass before he's looking to take the shot. And I want him to be more aggressive with it and just take the shot more often. So yeah, I agree with you there. I'll show this too, just another kind of comment. Again, not trying to place the blame all on Pat. Casey Davis says, Pat isn't the only one shooting. We've been playing 3 at the front, and that means there's at least 2 others that should be shooting. Got to get those 3 forwards pulling the trigger. So any comments on that there, Matt? I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, no, that's spot on. It's not just on Patrick. It's not just on Enzo. It's the whole team, and the whole team are missing shots. So we just got to do better as a team. Keep working at it again in training, like make that a focus. And I think we'll be all right.
Yep. And again, guys, if I ask any questions, Matt and David, that we've already talked about while I was trying to fight my camera settings, please let me know. But I think I cover all the ones that y'all talked about live and saved just the other ones. But Ryan Murray asks...
we did that one already. I was going to start for you. Sorry, Corey.
There's a reason I asked before this one, because I was like, this might be one we've already talked about. So, Ryan, you just get shouted out here twice. Actually, no, I'll go to Ryan. Thanks, Ryan. Question. Did we talk about his other question about will the DP be a 10? Have we talked about this yet? So a couple people asked this. I know I pulled up one question, but talking about that DP, is it looking like that's the position we'd be going for with that last DP spot?
I would say I think it should be a number 10. And then I know there's some other questions about Enzo in here. Again, I think we said last show, I think I would get to the summer and reevaluate Enzo and then make a determination if we need to move him and then get someone else in. But I think you probably need to give him to the summer anyway. But again, you're paid to score and you're not scoring and you keep missing chances. So if I were in charge summertime, if you're not cutting it, you're gone.
Yeah. And I think that does get to, I'll just shout it out. We wanted the answer because I think you just did answer it a little bit there. But Jay Forrest, he asked 2 questions. I'm pulling up the second one first. I'll pull up the first one in a second. But yeah, to your point just now, you know, if the transfer window will be different in the summer if Enzo continues to struggle. I think you're definitely right there. Maybe you're all of a sudden you have 2 open DP spots you're looking at there and looking to fill 2 positions. So move on from that. And then let's go to Jay's first question then. So Jay Forrest asks, what is it some people are seeing that makes them believe Enzo has double-digit goals in him? I don't know if it probably feels like a more rhetorical question, but if anybody wants to chime in, David, go.
I mean, I'll share first. I mean, I think he's possible. He almost did it last year. I mean, he had 6 goals last year. And I would say Carroll was kind of the main PK taker last year and probably took, what, 2 or 3 PKs, and if Enzo would have been the one to take those, could have been almost 10 goals there, right? Potentially. Yeah. It's a lot of theoretical situations there. And he was hurt last year at one point, right? he did at Racing with what, 19 goals his 2022, did it before coming here. So he's shown the ability to do it previously. So I definitely think he has the ability to do it. He runs off the ball really great. He's got a high motor. He does create chances. He's just got to finish. He's also got to be not gun shy of taking more shots, right? I absolutely think he can do it. I mean, again, we were just talking, we're in game 7 out of 34, 35 games, not including League's Cup. There's plenty of time still for him to get a goal coming up here. But Swift, you can disagree with me fully if you wish.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't done anything so far. I you know, we've had Vaughn on before, and he's always been big on Enzo, and I'm pretty sure him and Jay got into it on Twitter over this. So we also need to keep it civil on Twitter about this. Let's not attack people. I saw that. I didn't like it. But to Jay's point though, he's frustrated at Enzo, and so am I. Like, you got to score. Like, he's had opportunities. You're getting paid to do that, and you got to do it. And he had another chance this game and didn't. And it's a continuous problem. So again, for me, hopefully he can come good. But summertime, if he's nowhere near where he should be, I'm done. I'm done. He's had enough time. But hopefully I think he has it in him to score that many. But we're 7 games in. He's got to get going. So that's what you gotta do.
All right, I got one more saved live question that we'll pull up here. Assuming we didn't already talk about this one, I'm not getting head shakes, so I'm guessing we're clear. So Greg Fenwick asks, are you concerned about our ability to break down a team when we get behind and can't play off the counter or press as much? My quick answer is I wasn't concerned about it until I saw what happened on Saturday. But someone said, I think maybe Matt, you said it earlier in the show, like this felt way more like a last year, 2 years ago match. It was weird. I was having flashbacks of the way we played, especially in the second half there.
I think Corey, I think I leaned over to you when Swift left us because he was probably getting so pissed off watching the game in the second half. I leaned over to you. I was like, this feels like a Latanzio game all over again. Yeah. But go ahead, Swift. Sorry.
Oh, no. I think this was kind of a one-off game where we looked like we did last year, where we did have problems breaking teams down. Other than that, I think we have been in every single game and we have been dangerous in every single game. We've created chances in every single game. And honestly, I can't look at a game, even this one, and say, yeah, we were just outplayed. Like what game can you really look at this season? Even the tough road games, the two tough home games that we just played, what game did we really get just outplayed? I'd say zero. So I'm okay for right now. Just I think hopefully this was just a one-off situation.
A rainy day in Boston or wherever they are, Foxborough. All right, let's drop that down. So I'm going to jump over to our our pre-show questions. That was how I'll put it. But if you're watching live, please feel free to keep dropping questions in the chat. We will hop back over to those if we see some more come in. But I'll jump to some of the ones we had from before the show started, and this is just my favorite. We don't have to answer it, but this is exactly how I felt too. Elliot Fox asked, question, what the hell was that? Thank you. That felt like pretty much all of our reactions of like after, especially after how positive Matt and I were after the last, you know, in the last podcast recording, where we felt like things were really on the upswing. You know, we were really looking good. We played two of the best teams. We're going on the road against the worst team in the East. This is, you know, we got Leo Labada starting. You know, this is the chance to like, all right, we're getting healthy. We're getting our roster filled out. Let's go take care of business. And just that was tough. Yeah. So I'm with you, Elliot. That's exactly how I felt. I just wanted to shout out that question there. All right, let's jump into, I'm going to move around a little bit. Let's see. All right, this one's from Eric Hill. He says, Patrick and Vargas are still very young and fine-tuning their skills. Several players like Enzo, Brandt, and eventually Bender are returning from injuries. Are any of the first team players above spending a game or two with Crown Legacy, whether to correct some mechanics or rehab back to full side fitness? Basically, should Dean be using that resources more like MLB teams use their AA and AAA affiliates? You know, you see guys from the pros drop down either for a rehab stint or just to correct some little issues and come back up. Do you see that happening? Do you think that's something that would be done here? I know there's some roster rules involved too. I don't know. Matt, do you want to jump in with any thoughts you have with that one?
Yeah, I think the only person I would probably see is Brandon Cambridge when he comes back and Ben Bender. I don't see Brandt going down. And I thought I saw somewhere like sending Pat back down to Crown Legacy. I think that would be the worst thing in the world to do. It's like, hey, dude, you just had a bad game. Guess what you get to do? You're now demoted down to Crown Legacy. That's just mentally, and no, I wouldn't do that. And Patrick's a first-team player. He doesn't need to go back down to Crown Legacy. So, yeah, just those two would be the only two that I could see. I mean, we've seen, was it George Marks? We've seen Kalina. We've seen Carujo, like, coming back from rehab. You know, we did see Jalen Lindsey down because he just wasn't getting any minutes at all. I didn't see that as a demotion. It was like, hey, we need to get you ready. And that actually paid off because look, you know, then Burn gets injured and he's able to slide back in. So you can use that, you know, pipeline and maneuver, but, yeah, just Brandon and Bender are the only two I would see go down.
Yeah. Any other thoughts, David?
No, I agree. I think you saw that more often last year. I think that maybe that was just the coach's mentality with Latanzio. Because, I mean, you had Jan go down. You had a few other folks that just were, I don't know. But I didn't really agree with it. I don't think, yet. You know, what I mean. Yeah, I agree with Swift. I'm not going to belabor the point, but I agree with him.
Yeah, fair enough. All right. There's a couple of questions that are similar. I'll pull up. Let's see. I'll pull up Joe Emerson's question, but Richard Clark also asked a similar question. He did it as a role-playing exercise where Zoran calls you and says, what do we get?
I'm having flashbacks of work. Don't use that word, like Corey. Like, we're going to role-play real quick and just we'll go through the scenario. Please don't. No, I'm good.
So we're gonna work. All right, so I'm glad I didn't pull up the role-play version of this question. But essentially the question is, you know, we talked about, do we think it's a DP10, a U22 winger, or something else? Again, we've talked about, you know, what happens with Enzo maybe affecting that. But if you just said, like, right now, leaving the rest of the roster as it is, do you go for that 10? Do you go for a winger? What do you go for? I think, Matt, you've talked about this a little bit, so I'm going to put it on David to answer this one first.
Guy who doesn't know the roster rules very well, you're going to put on me first. That's great. So I would, I mean, honestly, I think a 10 would be the one is you got to go. I mean, just looking at the way the roster is built now, I mean, you got to assume it. Like if you're signing someone at this moment in time, you have to assume that you're still keeping Enzo and you're going to basically let him work it out. Right. You already have a bot on the wing. You've got Enzo up top. You got Pat up top. Potentially you need someone to create and be consistent in the middle and help create when we do get teams that get compact and sit on us. Right. And help create from that perspective. Our defense is solid. You know, Yuronen and, you know, Burn / Jalen Lindsey's good. Milanda's good. Privet's been playing good. I don't see any kind of need to invest a DP spot on that defensive line. I mean, maybe if you move Vargas on, you can bring a DP in, but like, there's no need to do that. I would say the Cam is probably the one that you have to go after.
I know you've already talked about this a little bit, Matt, but any other thoughts you want to throw out here?
Yeah, number 10, you got to have a difference maker, like a Carlos Hill, right? And then two, again, I keep saying like summertime, when you're going to make that move anyway, you do assess Enzo. And again, if he's not living up to it, go get you another DP striker. And I think those are the two positions that we really, really need. I think we're actually pretty solid in the midfield. And I like what I'm seeing defensively. And we have backups at each positions that I'm not, you know, scared to death if they come in, like I have been in the past. So I think we're in a good spot.
Corey, before we move on to the next question, there's a few comments here I wanted to pull up. So one, Swift, I don't know if you know anything about this, but Blake says Do you think Byrne will be back this weekend? So anything that you're hearing, or do you think we see Jalen again coming out there?
I think it's too early right now. Again, usually you'll start hearing stuff, you know, Thursday, Friday during training. That's when you also will kind of see who's going to be in the starting 11, right, during training and stuff like that. And you start kind of hearing things. So I hope he's back. I hope it's a, you know, just a little tweak and nothing serious. But again, if he's not, then I feel comfortable having Jalen out there, and we're playing at home. So,
yep. And then the other one I wanted to pull up, Corey, sorry to take over for just a second, but Greg says Patrick Enzo will only get better by competing against top competition and building chemistry with the first team. So going back to that comment and question, Swift, with you and agreeing with you, right? It doesn't benefit them sending them down like that. It, only if they were like maybe rehabbing and getting minutes to get game like fitness. But I agree with Greg there, where it doesn't benefit them to shoot against guys that are 18 years old in goal. You know what I mean? So there you go. There you go, Corey.
Yep.
Agreed. Yep. Good stuff. All right. A couple more of our pre-show questions I'll dive into. Let's do this one from Spencer Coop first. Do we think that once Kerwin, Patrick, and Enzo finally break the seal, that the goals start rolling with them, or is there more we need to do for better success for them? So is it just they're on a bad streak, and once it gets going and they see the ball hit the net, we're good? Or is there a bigger issue that you see as far as our attacking plan or goal scoring? I'll start with you this time, Matt.
Yeah, I think once these guys start scoring, it's going to start kind of rolling in. I would be more concerned, again, if we weren't creating chances. Again, all three of these guys are doing what they need to do to get into these positions. They're just, again, no one's finishing them off. I would be more concerned if our expected goals was really, really low. But yeah, I think, I mean, these guys are all streaky too. So if they can get going, it could be pretty dangerous.
Yeah. And David, I'm going to ask you the follow-up question from Russell Varner, which is, what voodoo hex would you do to help us be able to score again? So to get that thing rolling and get it started, what dark magic are we pulling out?
If that means that Corey has to be the co-host of the show again for 3 weeks and I go back to Conway, I will do that. If that means that Enzo, Pat, Vargas, Abada breaks the seal, whatever we need to do. I don't know if Corey appreciates that, but I will take that for the team.
No, I was about to say, I feel like that's a big sacrifice for you being willing to go back to Conway.
That's a probably a good call out there, but
sorry for any of our Conway listeners.
I don't think there's that many out there. Okay. But Greg says an eclipse is a good hex. A good voodoo. There you go. I think that's a good response there. That'd be good.
Hopefully
that breaks it.
I keep thinking about the movie Major League, where Serrano is always trying to do voodoo in the locker room. He has the snake and he has like the little Buddha thing. And he wants to like sacrifice a live chicken and all this stuff. So maybe some of that, I don't know.
That'd be another fun question. Like, who do you think the player is in the locker room that is the most like superstitious, trying to just like, you know, wear their shorts backward one day, or like, you know, just trying anything they can to get the streak going? Who's the superstitious one in the locker room?
I think Brandt would be very superstitious. It seems like that would be like my vibe, where if like he has a game winning goal and these like socks, he's like, I'm wearing these socks until something bad happens again. I don't know. I could be wrong on that one, but I don't know. What about you, Swift?
Yeah. Oh man, I'm trying to think of who would be the most superstitious. Man, I feel like, I don't know. Would it be a defensive person, or do you think it'd be someone on offense? I don't know. Yeah, no, that's a good question. We need to find out and ask around. I think that's a fun question. To find out who's the most superstitious. So if anybody's listening and you're in the press conferences, I would ask that one. Like, you know, we just had the eclipse. It's a perfect time to ask it. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's what Greg shouted out in the comments. That's a good, fun press conference question to lighten the mood a little bit in a press conference. He also says Bronico is his pick. I don't know if I have one either, but I just that just came to my brain of like there's probably somebody who's that, you know, superstitious one trying to get things going the right way. So I think it'd be a fun little question. All right, I'm going to do one more from our pre-show questions that I wanted to shout out. So Lynn Cornaccia, I'm going to guess on that one, says, considering we have a new manager, new players, and are still constructing our team via DPs, is the fan base expecting too much immediate gratification? I feel like I've talked about this in past shows, so I won't say anything yet, but go ahead, David. What do you think?
I mean, that's what makes fans fans, right? That's, you know, I mean, like, fans is short for fanatics, right? So typically fanatics and fans are going to have the highest expectation and want them to be undefeated, never lost, you know, as someone once said that his son plays for the Hornets now. But yeah, I think selfishly, I would want us to be undefeated. I do think that there is some selfishness from fans that want immediate gratification, but I'm not going to blame them for it because that's what being a fan is about. But you have to be also realistic on what your expectations are at certain times too, though.
Yeah. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I think you can't get too high and you can't get too low. But again, I could see why fans get frustrated based on, you know, kind of what we saw last year and the year before. And it's hard not to compare yourselves to Atlanta United, right? They had very early success. And then you have LAFC again. So it's hard not to compare, but I would say, again, it's our third year. Hopefully we can have a little patience, but at the same time, I can see why people are, you know, they kind of revert back to, oh God, we suck again as soon as we lose, right? So, but I think you just have to have some perspective. Like when we have a bad game, like, okay, we had a bad game. It was on the road. All you got to do is win your home games. We've played really well at home. We're about to have a huge home stretch in May. And then our schedule's a lot better now. Like we went through a rough, like, schedule past couple of games, right? And then plus we're still missing components of our team. So there's lots to be hopeful about. But again, when you lose to a team that's dead last and they suck and you still find a way to lose, it's a hard pill to swallow.
Well, and it's also the piece, and you kind of touched on this earlier too, and is I feel like if we don't play so well against Columbus and Cincinnati, this maybe doesn't hit as hard, right? It's like the expectations change as the season goes on. Because I honestly came into this season with lower expectations because new manager, losing two DPs, you know, reshuffling some things, needing to fill some spots. Like, I kind of came in being like, let's just see how they play and let's do it. But then you have that two-game run of getting 4 points against two really, really good teams. And then those expectations pop up. And then so when you see them come out and lay an egg, which is going to happen. Like, it's just going to happen throughout the season. They're going to have a really bad game. But when you see it after those two back-to-back, I think it starts to play with those expectations. Whereas if they were, you know, coming off a couple of, you know, losses or draws or something like that, it's maybe not the same. So I don't know. I just think that your perspective changes really quickly and all of a sudden you're seeing some success. So got to be realistic about where the team is, to Lynn's point, and what still needs to happen. But I think there's good things to come still, even though Saturday was not a good example of what could be coming. So hide that there. All right. Do we have anything else in the comments from the live show we wanted to pull up?
The only thing I wanted to pull up was Chris's comment. And it's not so much like to pick on Pat, but there was a moment there at the end when he got subbed out that his body language seemed like it just seemed off. And, you know, granted, frustrated, bad game, I get it. But just as a professional, you definitely don't want to do that too much, right? So just eat it, take a bad game. You know, I know it's easier said than done from being a fan because I'm not a professional in this whatsoever. But that was one thing I noticed was Pat's body language after those misses and getting subbed off was not great.
Yeah. No, I definitely see that. I mean, I get the frustration, though. I mean, it's just he's been in a rough, especially that, Matt. I mean, he knows the chances he has, obviously. Like, he knows what he
And he was playing like close to home, so he had friends and family there too. You know what I mean? So like, you know, he really wanted that game to be something special.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, I think that's all the questions we have. Anything else you all want to chat about before we head out? I know there's some other sporting event that, you know, is tipping off right around now or already
What game is that?
I don't care about any of the teams that are in it, but is there something big happening that people might want to watch? So anything else y'all want
to... Corey is trying to get off, though. He does want to watch it. So we... Yeah.
I will say this, yes. But so, and Franco was there as I continue the stream because he wants to get off and watch the game. Franco did say, and just as someone that was there, Pat was in pretty good spirits after the match. He came over and said hello to a lot of his friends, former teammates, family. So that's really good. So that's good to hear, Franco. And Franco, thank you for being there and fighting that weather that just seems awful. And then being in New England just doesn't seem fun at all. So
More power to all the Charlotte fans who were up there, because that was a miserable one. But like, you know, I'm glad.
Yeah.
Glad y'all showed up and showed out for Charlotte. That's cool.
I do have one thing. Crown Legacy plays Wednesday against Chicago 2. Pareba, if you remember, he was a former Crown Legacy player, is now on Chicago. So don't forget that. Like I said, we've said a couple times that you're going to see future Charlotte FC players play at Crown Legacy. And thank you, Joe, for reminding me. It is Rex Manning Day for those who celebrate. And if you don't know who Rex Manning is, you should go look it up or just watch Empire Records. Because let me tell you, no one can get mad on Rex Manning Day. Say no more, moan no more.
I think that's just how we end the show right there.
I should have hit the button on you. I was too slow to hit the button and close us all out.
There you go.
That's the place to end it. All right. Well, thank you all for watching. Thanks also again for everybody who came out to salute, to hang out with us again, and everybody who joined us on the live stream virtually, and for working through our slight technical difficulties at halftime as well too. We appreciate all of you. That was a lot of fun. We hope to do it again in the future. But for now, we'll sign off. Thanks again, everybody, and I'll see you later, Matt and David.